Hello everyone and welcome to episode 601 of So You Want to Be a Writer, the podcast that's all about writing and publishing. My name's Valerie Koo. I'm CEO of the Australian Writers' Centre, the world's leading centre for writing courses, and I'm your host. What's been happening in your world? I have been going through some of the wonderful feedback we've been getting for the course Writing Children's Novels, and there is one starting soon on the 27th of May. So if you want to discover how to write for middle grade, that wonderful sweet spot of young people from about 8 to 12, sometimes 13, this is the course for you. Books in this age group are very popular and have seen a surge in popularity in, you know, the last few years, because it's an age when readers are curious and they love to learn. They enjoy reading independently on their own, you know, about protagonists that they can relate to. And it's an age where you can start exploring more complex topics and even take your characters on big adventures and, of course, have lots of fun with lots of humour. Now, I want to bust a myth that's out there, because I've heard some people say that you have to have kids in order to write for kids, because otherwise how would you relate to them? You know, and they think that if you want to write for middle grade, you need kids of middle grade age. Well, that may be the case for some writers, but there are many writers who are very successful who don't have kids who write for kids. A great example is the wonderful author Rhys Carter, and he burst onto the scene with the fantastic middle grade novel, A Girl Called Corpse, followed by The Lonely Lighthouse of Elston Fright, which is set in the same world. And he's just doing so well as a middle grade author. Another great example is Catherine Pelosi, who's been on the podcast before. She's also a graduate of the Australian Writers' Centre, and she wrote the wonderful middle grade novel, Quark's Academy. And she talks about the fact that you don't have to have kids in order to write for kids. You just got to love writing for kids. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know about that course, because that is coming up and it is very, very popular. So if you want to check it out, and if you want to write for middle grade, then it's at writerscentre.com.au/children, and it's called Writing Children's Novels. That's writerscentre.com.au/children. And now let's welcome back our regular guest, Nat Newman, who is here to give us our writing tip for this week. How are you, Nat? What have you been up to?
I'm great, Valerie. How are you?
Good, 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 good. You're always busy. Tell us what you've been up to.
What have I been up to? Well, back to school, which is always good. So back to
what do you mean back to school?
Well, we just had 2 weeks off for TAFE, so now I'm back doing my certificate in screen and media. So learning all the sort of production side of how to make a film and stuff like that. So it's a lot of fun.
What would be your dream scenario in terms of making a film? I know that you're also an author and, you know, a writer of various things, but in terms of filmmaking, what would be your dream scenario? What would you want to create?
Oh my God, put me on the spot, Valerie. I don't know, I'm really enjoying making the short films. I think that they're really nice. But yeah, I guess one day it'd be lovely to make some sort of, you know what I've been thinking a lot lately? I don't see my story very much on TV, like, or in film. And I mean, like, kids who grew up in the suburbs of Australia, you know, things are either set in the city or they're set in the country. And that Australia just doesn't speak to me. So I would love to tell more stories about suburban kids and suburban people, and also the children of migrants and stuff. Like, you know, sort of our experience, I think, of Australia is not the quintessential Australian experience. And yet it's a really huge part of Australia. So I think I'd love to tell those stories.
Wow. Okay. And would you prefer doing short film, television, or feature length?
I think I'm not ambitious enough to even think about feature length. That seems so far out of my grasp. I mean, of course I'd love to, but right now I can't even imagine it. So yeah, I think sticking with short films and TV is probably as far as my imagination goes right now.
Well, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
But you've also been busy, because you are, unlike me, you are an early bird. I'm a night owl. So you've been doing a very interesting thing with current students of various creative writing courses at the Australian Writers' Centre. So this has been a fabulous daily event for the students who are currently enrolled in a creative writing course. Tell us what it is.
All right. It is called Words at Dawn.
I love it.
I know.
Words at dawn.
And it's just as simple as that. There's a whole bunch of us who meet up on Zoom, and at 6:30 a.m., rain or shine, Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday, public holidays, it doesn't matter. I'm always there, and we check in and we set an intention for the session, and then we switch off our mics, and then we just write for 50 minutes. And then at the end, we check in, and yeah, sort of share how much we wrote or any challenges we had or anything like that.
I love it. And currently it's open to anyone who is in a current creative writing course, novel writing essentials course, write your novel or edit your novel. And if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, I didn't know about it, well, it's definitely in your online classroom. So all of the information is there, including the Zoom link and so on. But it's a great way to get into the writing habit, right? You've had people coming in regularly and they're getting words done.
Yeah, for sure. There's some people who've come almost every day. I don't think anyone's come every day, but there's some people who've come almost every day. That means that they're writing every day, and they're getting their writing done first thing. But also, we're starting to develop a real sense of camaraderie. So, you get to the end, and even if you're brand new, but you get to the end and you're like, oh, I had this real problem with this scene, and then I realized I was in the wrong tense. And so, because we're all getting to the end and we're sharing what worked and what didn't work, we're able to learn from each other as well. So it's almost like you get this little 5-minute masterclass at the end of every session, which is awesome.
That's so good. Words at dawn. I love it. I love it.
Yes. And I know that you're not a morning person, but Valerie, this month we've also started Write the Night. So you could join us for the evening sessions on a Wednesday.
So that's on once a week at this stage.
Yeah, that's only once a week because I'm busy during my evening.
You're busy becoming Steven Spielberg and Anthony Trollope and all everything in between, and a linguist as well. Because you're currently studying Latin, and I'm not Latin,
Italian.
Italian, and I've literally just started that on Duolingo. So I shall be practicing my phrases on you, and hopefully you'll make sense of them.
Excelente.
All right. So, what is your writing tip for us this week?
Yeah, so my writing tip, actually, this comes out of one of our writers at a session last week, and she was talking about that she's collaborating with a friend on a rural crime novel. And I love this idea. So basically my tip is you should try and collaborate with people, but I'll get to that in a minute. So basically her and her friend are they're splitting chapters and they're writing this novel together. And I get the impression it's not something that either of them would do on their own. But because they've got this accountability and they've got to submit to each other, and they've got this idea that they're going to write this whole novel together, so it's forcing them to do this project together. And I love, love, love that idea. So of finding someone else and collaborating with them on a writing project. It doesn't have to be a whole novel. It could just be something small. Maybe you could write, a little script together or a little short story together. But I think collaboration is so amazing for any creative project.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And it's a good thing to experiment with. And you might respond well to it, or you might not, because you might just want to be by yourself and you might want to write in isolation. But so it depends on, your chemistry with that partner, of course. And we interviewed previously Nikki French, who is a husband and wife duo. And I think she writes in the attic or the top floor, and he writes in the garden shed at the se separately in their house. Or it could be the other way around. Maybe she writes in the garden shed and he writes in the attic, but whatever. And they alternate chapters and they end up with all these bestsellers, which is absolutely fantastic. So it can work. You don't have to be husband and wife, though. You can be friends and you can be exchanging chapters in the same way. So yeah, great. I love
Yeah,
that idea. Give it a go. It may or may not
and
work, but won't know till you find out.
I think that's so important. Like, I think a lot of people balk at the idea. They're like, oh, I don't want to work with someone else. Like, I like to write alone, but you just don't know until you try it, and you might be just blown away by it. And yeah, of course, you might come out of it and go, oh, I didn't like what we made, but you'll have made something you wouldn't have made otherwise, and that itself is exciting, and you don't know what you're
Yes.
going to learn from that.
And I did it. I just realized it was so long ago. It was a nonfiction book, and I did it with David Smeet, the comedian David Smeet. And we alternated chapters.
Oh, wow.
And And that was great fun because we had worked together previously, and so we knew each other's working style, and that's exactly what we did. And then we came together to make sure that it at the end to make sure it flowed well. And yeah, we ended up being interviewed by Koshi on Sunrise.
Oh, look at you!
now that I think of it, yeah. Anyway, that's good fun.
That's like the highest pinnacle of fame in Australia. Got interviewed by Koshi. What?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your tip this week, and we look forward to chatting to you again next week.
See ya.
I'm going to move on to our competition this week. This week, I'm giving away 3 copies of The Many Lies of Veronica Hawkins by Christina Perez, a captivating and addictive journey through the depths of materialism and extravagance, skillfully capturing the multi-layered society of Hong Kong. This story will keep you on the edge of your seat. Okay, so here's the blurb. I have 3 copies to give away, The Many Lies of Veronica Hawkins. A cursed woman, a beautiful socialite, a tragic heiress. Just who was Veronica Hawkins? When Martina Torres arrives in the glamorous and vibrant metropolis of Hong Kong, newly married to her high school sweetheart, the world seems to be her oyster. But looks can be deceiving. Adrift in a foreign city with no job and no friends, Martina chafes in her new role as expat wife. But her luck changes when she meets Veronica Hawkins. Beautiful, sophisticated, and very, very rich. Veronica is the epitome of old Hong Kong, the last surviving member of a British mercantile dynasty that built the city during its colonial heyday. Martina can hardly believe her fortune when she's taken under Veronica's wing and into her confidence, with Veronica helping her to find a new apartment, a new career, and most importantly, a new self. Veronica transforms Martina's life and then, shockingly, she dies. She disappears over the side of a yacht during a party attended by Hong Kong's most influential people, yet somehow there are no witnesses. Was it murder? Suicide? A terrible accident? What really happened to Veronica Hawkins? All right, I have 3 copies to give away. This sounds like a gripping book. I haven't read it yet. It sounds a little bit like a cross between that Nicole Kidman movie, The Expats, and that movie with Blake Lively called A Simple Favor. But anyway, it's not. It's a book all its own. It is The Many Lies of Veronica Hawkins by Christina Perez. So if you want your chance to win one of 3 copies, I've made it super, super easy for you. Just go to writercentre.com.au/win. That's writercentre.com.au/win, and follow the very simple instructions for your chance to win. And now, are you ready for the word of the week? Well, I hope you are, because the word of the week this week is consanguineous. Consanguineous. That's consanguineous. Consanguineous. What's it mean? Well, it's an adjective meaning related by birth. So to use it in a sentence, you might say, my best friend Martha and I were so alike in temperament and looks that people thought we were twins, although we weren't consanguineous at all. Now, you might not use it that way, but that's a way that you could use it if you wanted to, you know, impress people. And that was the word of the week. This podcast is brought to you by the Australian Writers' Centre, a world leader in writing courses. Would you like to create characters and stories kids will love? In our course, Writing Children's Novels, it's the perfect way to start your journey towards being a children's author. Reese Carter completed the course and his manuscript was picked up by his dream agent and became part of a bidding war. Here's what Reese says.
Hi, I'm Reese Carter. I'm an author, and I did a few courses at Australian Writers' Centre before writing my book, A Girl Called Corpse, a spooky middle-grade fantasy that has been published by Allen & Unwin. I don't think I ever expected there to be this much interest from publishers in A Girl Called Corpse. My book had sold both here in Australia as well as in the UK. Once I decided I really wanted to get serious about my writing, that's when I found Australian Writers' Centre. I did my first course, and the rest is history. I wish I'd known about Australian Writers' Centre sooner, because the change that first course made to my storytelling skills can't be overstated. I learned so much in writing children's novels that it's hard to name just one thing, but if I had to pick one takeaway out, it would be that story has a shape. I learned all about structure, in particular the three-act structure. I learned each of its different elements and how to use them to tell a better story. If it wasn't for Australian Writers' Centre, there's a very real chance I may not be published today. I would encourage anyone who is considering to do a course at Australian Writers' Centre to just do it.
Find out more at writerscentre.com.au/children. Now let's move on to our writer in residence this week. Today, I'm talking to Deborah Abella. She is one of Australia's most beloved children's authors. Her latest middle grade novel is The Kindness Project, which is her 29th book. Recently, she also released The Book of Wondrous Possibilities. While Deb writes mainly in middle grade, such as the Max Remy Super Spy series, the Ghost Club series, the Jasper Zammit series, and also books like Final Storm and the stupendously spectacular Spelling Bee, just to name a few, she has also written chapter books and picture books, such as Bear in Space and the upcoming No More Room in the Bed. Thanks so much for joining us today, Deb.
Oh, Valerie, it's so lovely to chat with you.
There is so much to talk about in your author career, and I really want to get into all the various stages of it and your strategy in structuring a successful author career. But first, let's talk about the latest book. I want to talk about a couple of books, but let's talk about the latest book, which is The Kindness Project. Can you tell us what it's about?
Yeah, just briefly, it's about four kids who are put together for a class assignment, and they have the entire term to come up with something that will make the world a better place. And it's called the Kindness Project. But the thing is, the teacher chooses the kids, and the four kids she has put together for this assignment cannot stand each other. So they somehow have to come up with something that makes the world a better place when they cannot even stand kind of talking to each other.
Where did this idea come from? And it's a middle grade novel, right?
Definitely middle grade. That's the space I love writing the most. I feel like my 11-year-old self is alive and well in me, and I think that's why I really love writing for that sort of age group. And so, I mean, each book comes about differently. And this one came about because I had this image in my head of a young girl kidnapping her nana. And I just thought, oh, this is going to be a lighter book. It's going to be a more sort of fun, just a lovely little story about the love between a nana and a kid. And I loved my nana as a kid. Like, she was skinny and feisty, and she brought up six kids on her own after her husband died really young. And she was like, she had tight curly hair, and she wasn't a cuddly I love you baking grandma, you know. She was a very really staunch, wonderful, strong woman. So I thought, oh no, this will be cute, this will be sort of a little tribute to my nana. And then of course, once you get an idea for a book, you ask lots and lots of questions. And then I thought, well, why is she kidnapping a grandma? Why doesn't she just take her out for a day trip, you know? And what is it about the nursing home that she thinks is so bad she has to, like, where they have to escape from it together? Where are her friends? Where's her mum? Where's her dad? And then once you ask questions like that, this tiny little idea or this tiny little scene grew. And I realized, well, she's of school age, so she needs to have friends. And I thought, well, what if the grandma escape from this pretty awful nursing home is actually just the catalyst for something else that's going to go on in this novel.
Love it, love it. So you write not only middle grade, but you write picture books, chapter books, and so on. So I want to talk more about The Kindness Project, but I want to just touch on the last middle grade novel, which was this gorgeous novel, The Book of Wondrous Possibilities. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Oh, that one is just my pure, unadulterated love letter to books and bookshops and libraries and librarians, and how they save us when we feel lost. And, you know, I anytime I feel anxious or nervous or upset or, you know, cranky about something, the single best thing I can do is just take a breath and read. And, you know, it may not solve my problems, but it'll put me in that calm space where I can go, okay, now I'm ready to face the world again. So it just came about because I realized that ever since I was a kid, I have felt that. And that safety that I feel from books and that wondrous kind of hug that I get from books is alive and well. And I just, you know, I make sure I read every day, and it's almost for my mental health as well as just kind of because it's a fun, lovely thing. So I wanted to write about a young kid who lives in a bookshop. He lives upstairs in a flat with his uncle, Avery, and he barely leaves the shop. And then I thought, okay, why? What's going on? And something happened to this little boy almost a year ago that has made him quite afraid of the world. And he literally disappears into books. Until on page one, a young girl called Lisette bursts into the shop and says, okay, you have to help me. I am being chased by a murderer, and you are the only one who can help. And the thing that is the catalyst for this novel is there is a book called The Book of Wondrous Possibilities, and it's a special kind of book. And this kind of murderous, angry man is after it, and it's up to the kids to protect it.
Such a gorgeous book. Now, let's talk about middle grade because you said that seems to be your sweet spot. Your 11-year-old, the 11-year-old inside you is the thing that's kind of coming out, and I totally get that. And it's interesting because writers often talk about there is an age, a children's age. Even if you write adult books, there's a, like my age is five. My partner's age is eight.
Yes.
So, you know, lots of fart things and that's
Yeah.
So
Yeah, of course.
tell me about what is it about that middle grade age that you love, well, obviously love writing for, but
Yeah.
it just means something to you, you know?
Yeah.
I'm touching my heart at the moment because I get what you're saying, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, what is it about that age?
I think it is really important if you're writing for whatever age group, I think it's important to know what age you are inside. I love that you mentioned that. I
Absolutely.
love that you know your partner's inside age too. That's very, very cute. And I think with middle grade, you're not little kids anymore, but you're certainly not an adult. You're miles from being an adult and even from being a teenager. So that sort of 8 to 12 year old age group, I love it because you're developing your own ideas. You're getting very strong opinions on why the world is the way it is and how you want to be in it. You're realizing who you are in that world, who you are to other people. You're really realizing the importance of friendship, and you know, family's always been important in a way, but I think it's such a lovely age because I think you can have real conversations. You can bring up topics and issues that are really important. And in almost all of my middle grade books, I definitely talk about things that can be issues for kids. And you know, in the Kindness Project, you know, I dealt with the idea of, okay, what if these four kids who came together, they've got some worries, right? And we all have worries. They're better shared. You know, a worried shared is a worry kind of halved. And I thought, what is one of the biggest fears for a kid? And I think it's something happening to a parent, right? Whether that parent is sick or goes away or is missing. And I thought, well, what if these four kids who do not like each other realize they've got something in common to do with their parents? And I think you can do that in middle grade. I think you can't do that so much in junior fiction because they're just not quite there yet. But you can do it in a really sensitive way, in a way that helps them understand, helps them go, oh my gosh, that's my position. You know, my dad goes away sometimes and I miss him desperately and I worry when he's away. Or, you know, my mum got sick that time in hospital and I worried for the entire week that she was away. And so I think you can actually do that, help kids feel less alone, help them feel like, oh, this isn't me. This is not just me that this happens to. Or they can go, wow, I'd never thought about that before in that other kid. And all of these things help us all to develop empathy and also, I think, kind of become human. That to me, like books to me are like passports to being human, I think.
Yeah. So you've written so many middle grade books and so many series. And everyone, you should go check them out because, you know, Deb's one of the best authors in Australia. So, but in terms of middle grade, it's actually, even though it's a small age range in the scheme of life, like say 8 to 12, what you write for it when you're focusing on an 8-year-old is very different, and you can tackle very different things for the 12-year-olds. What do you do in terms of like a guideline or some kind of thing that helps you decide, oh, that's too much or
Yeah.
that's too baby or whatever?
That is such a great question. I'm in a critique group and we meet once a month, and we were talking about this exact thing the other day. If you are dealing with a tough subject, how far do you go? Someone like Maurice Gleitzman is a genius at it. Like, he can talk about seriously heavy things, but just pull back just enough, I think. There's also, I think, just to complicate things, lower middle grade and upper middle grade. There's certainly sort of books that are more like your 10 to 12 and books that might skew a little bit. They're sweet and lovely, so they can go across the whole age range. Mine, I do, anytime I think, have I gone too far? I go back again to my 11-year-old self and think, try to imagine anyway, how would I handle this as a kid? Is this too scary? Have I coached it enough in things that won't make it too traumatizing? I mean, because the last thing I want to do, of course, is traumatize my readers, but I definitely want to challenge them. I definitely want to take them on an adventure. And of course, my job as an author is to make trouble for my characters, and I actually really want to push them. Because I also think that 8 to 12 year old age group can handle it. They can handle it if it's written in a sensitive sort of empathetic way. I think they can handle that, oh my gosh, this character's in such big trouble. And I try to leave all of my chapters, I try, on a cliffhanger. So hopefully at the end of each chapter, they're like, no, wait, what? They're gonna fall out of that hot air balloon, or, you know, what is gonna happen next? So it is such a great question, Valerie, because it's a constant balancing act, writing, in so many ways. In so, like, am I building up the plot enough so it's getting exciting enough to the wonderful climax? Am I going too far? Have I told too much at this? Do I need to just hint at things? Do I need to trust my reader's going to understand that without me spelling it all out? It's a complete and constant balancing act on so many levels, and that is a really, really important one, I think.
It's such a skill, isn't it? Because as you say, it's so important to go there but not traumatize.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've read some, because my inside age is five, I've read picture books where I've actually been traumatized as an adult, because it's like, I you want to throw the book away, because it's not, because it's not a good book, because it's, we just went over the edge, right?
Yeah.
So let's come back to the Kindness Project. Before I ask you that, this is book number what? I mean, you've written so many. What is this?
It's 29.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Book 29. All right. Yep. Well, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Book 29. But the Kindness Project, can you walk us through just a bit of a timeline of when you got the idea, mm-hmm. how long it kind of, you know, you let it sit and brew, and then the time period of getting to a draft that you were happy with?
Mm-hmm. This one's not a typical one for me in so many ways. And I initially came up with the idea. And the weird thing about this was, it, every time I then thought, oh, I've got enough ideas to kind of start writing chapter one, it kept coming out as verse. Now, I'm not a poet. I don't write verse. I love verse novels because the economy of language, the getting straight to the point, the white space on the page. There are so many things to love about verse novels. And then I thought, no, I'm not a poet. I need to write a prose novel because that's what I do. And it just kept wanting to come out as verse. So I thought, you know what, Deb, if I've learned anything in the 20 odd years that I've been writing, is to sometimes just go with it. Just trust that even if it doesn't work out, you will learn something along the way that'll be valuable. So I thought, I'm going to just keep doing it. And then it just kept coming out as verse. So what I did then was took it to my critique group and said, I need some help. I think something weird is going on, and I just need you to tell me, is this a complete disaster and should I just stop right now? And they read it, or read the first few stanzas that they gave them, and went, oh, okay, Deb, this is you. This is, you need to keep going with this. And so their support, of course, the support of your writing family is always so important. So I just kept going, and then it actually kind of came out fairly quickly, and I hesitate to say that in case it never ever happens again, because I knew the characters really, really well. I sit with characters for such a long time before I even try and write the first chapter. I always plan my story, so I kind of know that I'm putting enough tension and action to build up to justify the climax of the story. And then, of course, you will get to know your characters as you go along. So, and another thing I try to do with every book is, what is important to me right now? What bothers me about the world? What am I loving about the world? And for the Kindness Project, it's pretty obvious. I just thought, you know, the world's a little bit of a mess and adults are worried. What are kids doing? I'm constantly thinking, what are, especially 8 to 12 year old kids, you know, what are they doing with this information on the news and on social media when it's anxiety riddling for us? So I thought, you know what, I just want to write about kindness. I want to write about kindness being a superpower and kindness being a strength, not a weakness. Because I, you know, I kept seeing leaders around the world thinking all they had to do is smash and slam and yell and that's somehow being a good leader. And I thought, no, what happened to kindness? And so I wanted to write about the idea of a big project, like coming up with a school project to help, you know, your school community to become a better place, but also kindness in family groups, kindness in friendship groups, you know, and particularly if, you know, someone's mean to you or someone does something really nasty, instead of going, oh, you know what, I'm going to be so nasty right back. Like, I think being kindness is the stronger thing to do, because you go, well, actually, maybe they're just having a really bad day, or maybe something's going on in their family that is petrifying and really, really worrying. And we all have that, you know, anyone who's part of a family have had moments where there's been a crisis or there's been a huge worry for that family. So I wanted to explore that. But of course, because I'm me and friendships in books are the things I think that drive my books, that's, I hope that's what drives my books. I wanted these four kids who do not like each other to come together and realize, actually, oh, I've got something going on in my family too. And it's that idea of if you share a worry or you talk to someone you've never spoken to before and you've made all these assumptions about that person, maybe that conversation will make you realize, ah, actually, I quite like them, or they're really funny, or I never knew they liked, you know, fairy tales like I do. And so books are always a combination of the story and the characters, but the stuff that I feel really, really passionately about at that time.
I love that. So when you decided to write it, you said that it came out fairly easily. And obviously that even though you had the difficult task of writing it in verse, but obviously that's because you allowed yourself to just kind of follow your creative intuition and just go with it, as you said. That's what happens, right? Rather than you trying to fit into some kind of mold. Yeah. But you also said you like planning your stories. So tell me about that. How much is planned?
The whole thing.
Before you start.
Yeah.
Like it, what does that look like? Is it in a Word document? Like, what does that look like?
Well, I work on Scrivener. I use that program, so I can put all my research, all my photographs, all everything into one document and can easily sort of click from one to the other. And so it sort of starts at the pitch stage. So I've been with the same publisher for 20 years. And so she knows, O. Walton, she knows my work very well. She knows if I hand it in a pitch, I'll deliver, you know, she knows I can meet deadlines mostly and all the rest. So the pitch document that I hand her is, it's huge. It's often, it can be 20,000 words long, just the pitch document. And in that, I'll put like the main character breakdowns. And you know, you have to know so much about your characters, even stuff that will not ever appear in the book. But if I know their past and what makes them tick, I will know naturally how they will react in a situation. I hand in the synopsis, so literally the beginning, middle and end, in big sweeps. And then I also hand in normally the first five chapters, but in the Kindness Project, probably the first sort of 20 verses, I think. And that I partly do that for myself. I do that because then the publisher will know that whether they want to take it to acquisitions or not. And it also means that if that's given a green light and yep, we're going to sign that up and do it, I'm in a really good place by the time I go, okay, here we go. Cause I can, that, I then I'm, by then I'm up to chapter six and the novel's away and I know what the big problems are. And so I have to do it. I have to make sure I know the story first before I even pitch it.
Wow. Okay. So not just knowing the story, you said you really know your main characters.
Yeah.
So when you are thinking really about and formulating your characters and the story before you get down to, you know, writing a pitch document, what are you doing? Like, are you writing something else and you're thinking about this? Do you go on long walks? Do you, like, what do you do to actually formulate the characters and the story in your head?
Yeah. So all of the above. But I also, like I've said, I'm in a critique group. So I run it by them and they'll often say, So sorry, why did that character do that thing, or why is she there, or why would she care about that thing? And then I go away thinking, yeah, what is her backstory that would make her care desperately about this thing? So my critique group, oh my gosh, that I don't know how I ever wrote without a critique group, and I couldn't do it now. But then I also, so I look at images online. So once I got a fairly goodish idea, I then need a visual to kind of fix on. And then sometimes just seeing a visual representation of my character, it helps me get to know them even more. So in the Book of Wondrous Possibilities, for example, there was this really eccentric, amazing, terrible driver of a professor, university professor, called Griselda. And I built up her character, and then I thought, right, who is going to play Griselda, basically? So I went online searching, and I saw a picture of, Miriam Margolyes. Oh my gosh, yes. So she's
She's
strong and,
perfect.
oh my gosh, and strong and feisty with this shock of curly, lovely gray hair. And I thought, that's Griselda. So as I'm writing, I'm seeing Miriam Margolyes in my head, jumping into cars and swerving, terribly on the road. And so that definitely is one way I also get to know my characters. I need the visuals, and I get lots of visuals of settings and place. I do go for long walks, I go for bike rides, I do that. And if I get super, super struck, I try to keep asking questions. Why? Why would this character care about this thing? Why does this mean more to them than anything? What would they do to protect the thing they love? Would they do anything? And you have to know what your character wants, what your character needs. That's basic. And once you know that, you will know their capabilities, and you will know their limits, I guess.
So what do you do then? Do you actually write it? Do you kind of go, I'm going to write one page about this character so that I've distilled it in, from my head onto paper? What does it look like on a practical level?
I don't want, it's a mess. It's a total mess, Valerie. It's just so sometimes I'll be in the middle of writing something about the setting, and then I'll think, oh, I've got an idea of why that character cares so much about, like, so for example, I'm writing a book about I'm writing a pitch at the moment, and I've got a character who really loves being a librarian and cares about it. Why? What happened in her past that she cares about it so much? And so it's a mess. Sometimes I'm in the middle of a chapter and I'll think, oh, I know how to fix the ending now. So I'll often jump from one file to another as the kind of ideas bubble up. Because if I don't do it then too, I'll forget it. So I need to write it down as I think about it. So I've got multiple documents open at any one point. I've got, all the, and Scrivener, you can do that really easily. And even this morning again, I fiddled again with some character breakdown stuff, thinking, oh, I know them even better now because they're going to do this. And this is all now building up to making a pitch to my publisher in the next kind of, hopefully, couple of days.
So you talk about pitching to your publish to a publisher, to your publisher that you've had for a long time. And the thing is, they, as you say, know you're going to deliver. They know you really well. After 29 books, a lot of people would assume that every pitch you write is a yes. Is that the case?
No, it is not. And it shouldn't be, in a way, because publishers know stuff we don't know. They know what they've already signed up. They know what they've signed up in the next 2 years sometimes. They know the market. They can see patterns and shifts and stuff. So you might actually pitch something to them that was really hot property, or that another publisher just brought out a very, very similar title, or even one of their authors brought out a. So there's no way they are going to sign that up. It could be beautifully written. It could be a fantastic concept. So there's, I never assume. In fact, I often think the last book I sign up is the last book that I will sign up. And that's kind of freeing in a way too, because I just think I've been lucky to have written for as long as I have. I think 2002, my first novel came out. So I feel super, super, super lucky. But also, I'm more fascinated by writing than I ever have been. So I feel lucky that I still have this kind of fire for it as well.
So take me back to 2002 or before 2002. What were you doing and what made you think, I'm going to write a book?
Actually, I think it was Easter eggs, really. So I went to UTS, University of Technology in Sydney, and I did a film and a film. That was my major, film and film theory. Thinking I'm going to be a director of photography and I'm going to work in film and that's what I want to do. And then very quickly, I actually really, really enjoyed the prose writing courses that we did. So I then got it. My very first job was working at a production house that made TV dramas and sold them onto television stations. And then I worked at Channel 10 for a little while, thinking that's when I still thought, yep, I'm in TV. That's where I want to stay. But then I kept on seeing somebody walk past my office, and sometimes she'd have boxes of toys and other times she'd have boxes of Easter eggs. And I kept thinking, well, what does she do? Like, no one's delivering me boxes of toys or Easter eggs to my office. And so we got chatting and she said, I've just started up a brand new kids show. And in fact, I need an assistant producer. Do you want to do that? And the second she said that, up until then, I hadn't wanted to write for kids. I hadn't realized it. And I thought, oh my gosh, that is what I want to do. So I worked on that show for about 7 years. She left and I became the producer and the writer of it for a couple of years. And in at home before I went to work, and when I came home, I was writing my very first kids novel, which was the first in the Max Remy series, and sent that out as a fully written novel. It got signed up by my same publisher, Penguin Random House, and they actually said, we like this one so much, can we sign up another one? And that's when I quit my job thinking, all right, I'm going to give myself 2 years. And if in 2 years I'm still living on, you know, Vegemite sandwiches, then I'll reconsider. But luckily, it's just been going ever since.
That's amazing. I'm still living on Vegemite sandwiches.
I don't want to diss Vegemite sandwiches. They're very fine.
All right. So it started happening for you, and you start with Max Remy. What, maybe at the time it's hard to think, oh, I'm going to plan this author career, because you really don't know what's going to happen. But in hindsight, what did you do? What do you think you did that were wise decisions in order to have longevity?
This is so funny, because I heard you mention, you know, earlier in this conversation, you were talking about strategy and, you know, and you know, planning your career and stuff. And I thought, oh no, there's been very little of that. Because I know authors who are like, right, I'm going to write this series first. I'm going to follow up with this series. And then I'm going to go slightly younger. So I capture all my, like, honestly, like some people, which is great. I would never put that down. But I think the only way I can write is by trusting that story that's bubbling up above all the others, and trusting that those characters will be appealing to kids. When I look at my novels that I've written, and even though some are spies, some are soccer, you know, some are books of wondrous possibilities and kindness projects, I feel like I'm sort of writing the same book in a way, but hopefully with just different and exciting adventures. And sometimes I add sword fights and sometimes I add flying machines. I want to explore being that age. I want to explore the fears, the worries, the strengths of kids that age. I want to explore the idea that often kids are so much braver than they think they are. And so I feel like I'm exploring that, but in lots and lots and lots of different ways. So I can't say I've strategized at all. I've just tried to write the books that I feel I love, but also I feel there is an audience for it as well. And it could sit really nicely on the shelf alongside other middle grade books.
So the vast majority are middle grade, but you have also written picture books and chapter books. Tell me then about the decision to write some of those. So what was the last picture book? Remind me. Was that Bear in Space?
So a book called Bear in Space. Mm. And I did that with the incredibly talented Marjorie Crosby Farrell. And that is an unusual book because we had a writing day together. A group of us went to Taronga Zoo, in fact, to get ideas for a story. We saw a bear in a lovely bear enclosure, and the zookeepers told us he's quite a nervous bear, found it hard to make friends, until another bear came to join the particular enclosure and they became best friends. And so I'm thinking, I'm going to write a story about a bear who makes friends, who found it hard to make friends, right? But then Marjorie is drawing this beautiful drawing of a bear floating in space, and I thought, oh, what about that? What if the thing he loves more than anything is space? And that's the thing that draws these two bears together, which is also what happens in life, right? You are drawn to people with similar interests. So Marjorie and I actually worked on that together and did the pitch together. That's very unusual for picture books. In fact, Publishers don't like it often. They want just plain text, no instructions or anything, and they will choose the illustrator. Thank you very much. So we pitched it together, and of course Marjorie did some beautiful initial illustrations of what the bear would look like. And luckily for us, that's a Walker book. Lindsay Knight, who was the then head of Walker Book, she just fell in love with it and said, "I love it." And she loved the quirky character of Bear, who's quite different but then makes a friend. And the big message of that is, you know, just to don't change yourself to have other people like you. Like, just trust the friends that are the really important ones who will love you just the way you are. So that was a very different process to what I think normally probably happens with picture books.
I mean, that's a gorgeous book. I gave that to my friend's niece who, you know, she's probably a bit young for it, but she'll grow into it. She'll grow into it. That sounds like it happened very organically. But in terms of making the decision to do a chapter book or a picture book versus a middle grade book,
yeah,
because it's a different energy, you do different, it's a different approach.
Yeah.
Is that what happens? You just kind of feel pulled to do it? You don't kind of go, "Oh, I think I should release a picture book this year."
No. And in fact, I try to avoid releasing picture books because I think they're so hard, and they're so hard to get right. And I read picture books and, you know, the ones that just nail it, the ones that really bring it home, the text, the images, everything is beautiful and everything is in its place. I don't feel like that happens a lot. I feel like there are beautiful picture books. They're a fine, fine, lovely read. But the ones that are just so special, they have this something else going on. That is so lovely when you come across it. So I don't want anything to do with picture books. And in fact, I have a picture book coming out in August this year. And that was an accident.
Tell me about it. So that's No More Room in the Bed. So tell us about, why is that an accident?
Well, it's an accident because I'm part of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, called Squibby, we call it. And we run, you know, professional development days and conference days and all sorts of things to connect authors and illustrators and publishers. And so we run competitions too sometimes. So we had this competition with Larrikin House and our members, where they could, it was exclusive to our members, and you could pitch an idea or a text, a picture book text, to Larrikin House, and the winner would win a manuscript assessment. So no promise of publication, but you can actually talk to a publisher and get them to assess your manuscript, which was brilliant. So I'm getting this competition ready, and I'm, you know, all the our teams kind of, you know, doing the website and getting the forms ready. And I thought, well, I should enter instead of just organizing this. So I entered, and I know this sounds bad, but I won. And I didn't mean, like, I just thought, this is good practice. I think it's good to submit to things. I think it's good to pitch to things. It's brilliant practice, right? Whatever happens. And in fact, my team said, so Deb, look, we've got the winners, but you're too busy. Don't worry about putting it up on the website. And I said, no, it's my job. I can do it. I have time. And they went, no. And I didn't realize why they were saying, no, Deb, don't you do it. It's because I'd won. So, and then Larrikin House, James and Danny at Larrikin, loved it so much. And as I've got my notepad ready, you know, we had a Zoom and I was ready to take notes about how to improve this. And then halfway through, James said, so with the cover, we thought, and I went, wait, what? Are you going to publish it? And he went, well, yeah, why wouldn't we? It's really funny. So that's the book we're working on at the moment. And that's the one that comes out in August.
I love that. Okay. Now, I know you say that you have no strategy, and I believe you. However, is there a rhythm, I'll use that word instead then, to your output? Like, is it kind of like, oh, it's generally a book a year or two or whatever? Like, okay, is there a rhythm to your output?
Yes and no. Generally, I like to have a book out a year. Last year, I didn't have a book out, but this year I'll have two books out. So, and that's sometimes about publisher schedules and stuff like that. I am happiest when I'm in a book.
As in writing a book.
Yes. And whether it's early days of it or drafting it or whatever, that is when I'm happiest. And you may laugh at me, but if I know I'm not putting enough attention towards a book, I have dreams where I don't look after children very well. Like, I have dreams where people say, I might be minding a baby, and then I turn around and I think, oh my gosh, where's the baby I'm supposed to be minding? Or do you know what I mean? Or I've got a baby and I can't keep them happy. And so it's constant. And if I'm not paying enough attention to my writing, which is my baby, obviously. So I like being in a project, and I like being in a middle grade once a year. When you mentioned rhythm, though, that was really interesting, because I often like to go, I've realized in the last few years, from a realistic novel, like a contemporary realistic setting, to then the next novel being not that. So I love playing on the very, very fringes of fantasy. I'm not a fantasy writer at all, but I like setting something in a real world with a touch of possibility. So for example, the Book of Wondrous Possibilities is definitely that. They find this book where it looks like there's something special going on to anyone who touches this book, but is it, you know? So, and then The Kindness Project, very much realistic, set in a school, bunch of kids, bunch of problems, and a bunch of friendships. So, and the book that I'm working on now after The Kindness Project is again touching on fantasy. So I think as far as rhythms go, that's probably, yeah, around once a year and around, you know, either realistic and then fantasy.
So in addition to being in the book and being in your happy place, mm-hmm. you obviously must juggle that with school visits.
Yeah.
And author talks, you know, appearances with kids.
Yeah.
In your career, how important has that been, and do you make a point of ensuring that you do X amount per year?
Yeah, it's really important to me. It's so, so important. And I knew that already, but I realized during COVID, because I live in Sydney, I think one of the longest lockdowns was around 3 months or almost 3 months. And the first lockdown, I was okay, because I thought, oh, I've got all this time to write and who knows what's going to happen. And the second lockdown, I just couldn't write. I thought, I need to see kids and I need to do writing workshops with them and I need to, you know, explore ideas and imagination with them, and I need to see teacher librarians and I need to see authors, other authors. And that's in fact when I formed the critique group that we're in now. So 4 years later, we're still meeting once a month. So I realize I actually am not somebody who could just move now to a tiny island and just write novels for the rest of my life. It wouldn't work. I need to be with kids. I need to see what makes them laugh. I try out, of course, books on them. I try out first chapters. And with the Book of Wondrous Possibilities, I read the first chapter to a class once when I'd written two or three chapters or something. And they were pin drop silent. And I thought, okay, I'm going to keep going with this. This is exactly what I wanted from an audience reaction. So I do use kids as well to give me feedback. And often when I finish a first draft, I will find three bookish kids in my world, either, you know, friends, kids or whatever, and I ask them to read it and just give me their reactions too. So being with kids and being around kids and exploring ideas with kids is, for me, super, super important if I'm going to write for kids.
Okay, so you find three or so bookish kids to kind of be your beta readers for a manuscript. When you are now at that age, how do you ask for the feedback? Do you say, hey, got any feedback? Or do you give them like a questionnaire? Or, you know, it's hard for a kid that age to kind of know what to say or where to start. So how do you help them out with that?
Yeah, I often choose bookish kids, like especially for that early draft. So I choose kids who will disappear into any book. They're very forgiving of books. They will read and read and read almost regardless of what it is, in a way. And I will just say to them, let me know, is there a place you notice you got a bit bored? Let me know if there's somewhere that you got quite excited, because that's good to know that, okay, that part's working, that part's not working so much. Tell me if you like someone or didn't like someone and why. Tell me if something didn't make sense to you. Like, oh, why is this character suddenly doing that? Because sometimes, of course, when you're in a first draft, it makes perfect sense to you, right? And then someone else reads it and goes, I have no idea what's going on here. So I do choose kids. For the last 20 years, I've been working in a library one day a week. I had to give it away because I just couldn't squish it in to everything else anymore. But I love, love, loved it. And you get to know, of course, the brilliantly bookish, kid-loving kids. And so I would often sort of, you know, sidle up to them and say, can I ask you a favor? And it's a big favor, but would you mind? And then their little eyes usually light up and they get very excited. So
what a wonderful opportunity to read a Deb Abella novel. Oh my God.
And then also as a thank you, their name goes on the book. Like it goes, you know, they can give me a little quote. And then, of course, I get their parents' permission. Is it okay? And, you know, everybody says yes. And then it's very exciting. And then they get an early copy before everybody else. So it's, you know. They usually get very, very excited. My little Deb, my 11-year-old little Deb, would have lost her mind if she was ever given that opportunity. Yeah,
I could literally talk to you for hours, Deb. I really could, but I'm mindful that we've been talking quite a lot. So I would love to end with what are your top three tips for aspiring writers who are writing middle grade specifically? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, only three. Okay. I think my big one, okay, you need to read middle grade. I get a little bit surprised sometimes when I meet middle grade authors and they don't read middle grade, or I meet picture book writers and they don't read picture books. I think you kind of need to know what's out there, partly so you can also work out, okay, how can I be different? How can I fit into this space? But how can I shine and not feel like everybody else? So definitely read the space where you want to write. Join a critique group if you're not already in one and trial those ideas. Or even you can just tell people at home. I know even with this pitch that I'm getting together right now, every time I say it out loud to someone, it develops even further, or their reaction makes me go, oh good, that part's working, great. So yeah, read, join a critique group, and you have to write from your heart, I think, with middle grade, even if your heart is, I just love a really good laugh. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be serious and intense kind of emotional issues, but in middle grade, you definitely have the space to do that. And that is, like I was saying before, that's partly the reason I love middle grade, because I can do that. So I think they're my big three.
Oh, I love them. Okay. Everyone, you've got to check out Deb's books. I mean, she is a master, every single one of them, but in particular, The Kindness Project. And, of course, the last gorgeous book, which was The Book of Wondrous Possibilities. So thank you so much, Deb. Really appreciate your time today.
It was so easy and so lovely to chat to you. Thank you, Valerie.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Deb. Now I want to leave you with this fun fact. The word polish changes pronunciation and meaning when you capitalize it. So, of course, then it becomes Polish, as in people from Poland or things from Poland. This is known as capitalization-sensitive homograph, or a capitonym. There you go. Polish to Polish, or Polish to Polish. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. It's been great fun, and I hope to see you again next week. In the meantime, for those of you who are participating, I hope you've been doing your story seeds. Now, if you're not sure what the story seeds are, this is basically where I give you a month's worth of writing prompts to help you grow your writing skills. And it is issued on the last Thursday of every month via the Australian Writers' Centre newsletter. So you need to subscribe in order to, you know, make sure that you get sent the story seeds. If you want to subscribe, it's at writerscentre.com.au/news. And as I said, they're sent out on the last Thursday of every month so that you have it ready for the first of the month. So the one for May is already out. Obviously, the next one is going to be for June. But if you've got the May one, I hope you're having fun. I've been doing them every morning, sometimes in the morning, sometimes not quite in the morning. And do share your experiences in the Facebook group. I'm going to be posting some pictures of where I'm doing my story seeds, because I tend to like to get out and about to write them in my journal or on my iPad. So if you're not already in the Facebook group, do join us. It's free to join. Just search for So You Want to Be a Writer podcast community on Facebook and request to join. In the meantime, thanks so much for hanging out, and I look forward to chatting to you again next time. Thanks for listening to So You Want to Be a Writer. You'll find the show notes at writerscentre.com.au/podcast.
or sign up for our awesome and often hilarious weekly newsletter at writercentre.com.au/news, where you'll find writing resources, giveaways, competitions, and much more.